All right, here we are. Welcome back to Book Wave, the book club podcast. Back today for another Wave cast. I'm your host, Scott, joined today as usual by William.
Hey guys, how's it going?
And by a special guest, Stobbsy. How's it going?
What's up, guys?
All right.
Pretty good, man.
Why don't we start with a little introduction, Stobbsy? How's it going? How'd you get internet famous? Tell us a little bit about your journey.
I'm not quite there yet, but I'm on the way. But yeah, man, I've been making beats for a ton of years, but I just never really knew how to like actually take it anywhere. Like, you know, go like, I didn't really know what the possibilities were, but circumstance put me in the right situation, and then I kind of just took off from there and started going, trying to figure it all out. No real guidance either, you know. You just kind of got to jump into it head first and start swimming, man.
So for the deaf, dumb, and blind member of the audience, like, what kind of beats do you make?
Well, I started with, like, just basic hip-hop beats. Like, I was actually trying to be a rapper sort of thing, but I couldn't find any beats that I would actually vibe with, you know? So I just started making my own, and that's kind of where I've been. But, like, recently I've just been experimenting, trying to kind of cut out my own little section of hip-hop and see if anybody wants to join me there sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, I do. Because, you know, we were talking to Two More V's not too long ago, and he's sort of in that world of making his own section of the music industry, and he's doing the Flo-Fi, and I know you're doing something similar to that. You've had some Alan Watt samples on your tracks too, I think, right?
Yeah. It's just, I feel like I try to tell a story with the beat, and then the artist, whoever wants to rap on it, can kind of, it gives them a head start because they have something to go with, you know? That's kind of my perspective on it, I guess. And also just to add something new to the avenue of hip hop. But that I listened to that guy's Flo-Fi thing, and oddly enough, I feel like he started his Flo-Fi journey around the same time I started experimenting with like these ambient sounds and, you know? Also, I find, like, if you've ever watched, like, the making of a movie, the sound guys, it's essentially the same thing as making a beat, but they're just structuring sound in the way where it would also click visually, you know?
Like, engineering the experience more than just the sounds.
Exactly. So I'm trying to add an experience to the song, not just the song itself.
Yeah, like, I always talk about Star Wars in this comparison. You watch Star Wars without the music, it does not hit as hard. The music is 80% of that movie. I don't care who you ask.
I think we were talking about this recently too. Like, I was watching this new anime, and it was like 90% fighting, 10% dialogue, and it was just like the music kept jarringly shifting, like, so you'd be in the middle of a love song and then it would shift over to fight music, and then it would shift to like intrigue, and then it was just back and forth, and it was like I couldn't even get into the show because the person that was doing the music had no idea what they were doing. It was abuse.
Yeah, it could throw you off because I feel like certain noises and sounds can like trigger emotions like without even your awareness of it yet, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Scott, do you want to maybe share with Derek, I'm gonna call you Derek now,
yeah, man,
a bit about how we got started, just for his own understanding, and sort of Akira the Dawn and that whole early day origin story?
So we all got united, like the original group of we originally called ourselves the Akira the Dawn Official Book Club, right? Because we just got together in this DJ's Discord. You know, we all united over Jordan Peterson and Alan Watts and Terrence McKenna, a number of other thinkers, Joseph Campbell. We just started reading books together. And at one point, halfway through reading Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, we said, hey, why aren't we recording these? Like, these could be great. And then everyone who doesn't make it and like is on the other side of the world for these book club meetings, they'd just be able to watch it on YouTube. So like, there's no reason not to. So then we kept going, and then eventually down the line, I called up my buddy Will and said, hey, did you delete me as a friend on Facebook, or did you just delete Facebook? And then that turned into, so yeah, I'm in like this book club thing. You might be into Akira the Don. He's making the stuff he calls Meaning Wave. I don't know. I show it to some people. They say, this is kind of weird. I'm not into it. I'll take a pass. And I show it to other people and they say, wow, this is revolutionary. And Will happened to be one of the latter. So he joined the book club. And then, you know, since then, we've just been ramping up production. We all got webcams. Before, it was just audio clips. Like, we weren't even showing each other our faces. We were all too nervous.
Yeah, man.
I was riddled by anxiety. That's kind of how I was
coming into this, too. I was like, uh-oh, I don't know what I'm doing or what to say. But I guess
that's perfect, though. Like, just when you were talking about, like, taking that first step in, like, this route of hip-hop, you just got to take that first step in all of these routes in life. Take that first step of the hero's journey.
Yeah, and it was like, for me, so I only just started like digesting everything that we put out, and now I'm like, so we're recording it, and I'm reading something, and I'm getting ready for it, and now I'm listening to it after the fact, and I'm reflecting on it, and we're trying to find clips for it, and seeing how stupid we sound, and fact-checking, and it's like, I think it's taken the 2 years to get to the point to be able to do that and stand comfortably looking at it and be able to sort of almost objectively see it, because in the first couple of years it was just so intense and nerve-wracking to get on camera, have a terrible looking background and have a terrible looking face and have a terrible sounding voice and like all of these things. And it's like, wait a second, every other human being on the world that I look at that creates something, I think, wow, what guts, what gusto, you know, like I respect them and they are showing up and being authentic. How do I do that? And it's like, so maybe it does, I already am.
Yeah. So I feel like I've been doing so much like thinking over the last couple of years too, along with my music. And I've been looking for answers like within the journey of trying to develop this music thing. Right. And like through that, I've learned that like everybody on this earth is all trying to create their art at all times, because that's all that we know how to do, is create what can come from us, right? But the thing is you could just, all you got to do is believe in it and be confident in it, and you're good to go. Other than that, there's no problem, dude. Like everybody that we look up to as a role model, for example, it's just being their authentic self, and that's why we look up to them. Right, like Jordan Peterson, I don't really know much about him, but I'm sure like we look up to him because he speaks like of value to us, right? And he's only speaking of value to us because that's what matters to him, and we just connect with that idea.
Yeah, and it's authentic. He's not afraid to put his ideas out there. It's like, tell the truth or at least don't lie. That's more than just a rule in a book, you know. It's like he lives that, and I find that inspiring.
Is he religious though?
Well,
it's a loaded question. It's right now.
Well, I mean, I only watched a bit of the one video where you guys were talking about it, and he said something that was profound about I live as if God exists.
Yeah.
And that right there kind of blew my mind, because I'm like, what does that mean?
Like when I first heard that, like too, that blew my mind. I was like, you can live like this? But over the years, he's kind of been making the case that you can't, and he's been turning closer and closer to Christianity as time has gone by. So I'm not really sure. I don't have an answer for you of is he religious or how religious is he, because he has given a different answer to that question every single time he's been asked it.
Yeah, he's evolving on the world stage. Like, he has been writing these two books and touring with the first book across the world and enduring, like, life and doing it through the lens of YouTube and, like, posting his lectures on the internet and fighting legislature and, like, actually just existing in the public realm. And, like, he never did it on brand, you know? Like, he had a logo, but he was a man. And he just showed up and kept growing. And it's crazy. That's why I say it's a loaded question, because it's like it's loaded. It has not been shot yet. I don't know where he will land. Give him another 2 years. I think I might have a better answer.
But yo, he's developing too, just like all of us, right? Like, yeah, he's still trying to figure out what his, you know, in some sense he might have it figured out, like, what would you call it, financially, whatever. But he might not.
Yeah,
you know, like, just like everybody, we're trying to keep going, right?
Yeah, that's another thing that's just so inspiring about Jordan Peterson. He presents himself as an imperfect being growing, and he doesn't hide that at all. Like, there's too many people, once you start looking for like self-help books or, you know, YouTube gurus, it's just like, I have the answer for you, and it's right here in this book, just $14.99, and you got everything you need for life.
So for like me, I think, yeah, like I deleted Facebook a couple years ago because I was angry and I didn't like any of my friends or anything they had to say. And I found that Facebook was making me feel that way, and it couldn't possibly be true. So I just got rid of it to see, you know, what that would do. And then Scott reached out to me, and I got into the Discord world of Akira the Don's lo-fi server. And he was telling me about, you know, this book club that they were doing. And I was like, at this time, I was just starting my own life coaching business, and I was, you know, engrossed in business tools. And I was like, why aren't you monetizing this? You're a fool. You're getting a group of people together and you're talking about a thing, and you're doing this on a recurring basis. You should press record. What are you doing? You're leaving money on the table. And I got in the middle of the meditations with you guys, and then we got into 12 Rules for Life pretty quickly. At least that's how it feels to me. And it's history now to me. Like, this is an origin story. But the way I remember it in my mythology is that, you know, we started reading these rules, and we started living these rules and immersing ourselves in these lessons and looking for more lessons and finding book lists and compiling these ambitious goals of what we were going to do. And it was like, we put it all on the internet, and we didn't really know where we were going or what it was going to look like. And we, the whole time, I felt like there was one member who's not here with us today, like saying, oh, we should advertise. And I was like, we don't know what we're doing. Nah, we're not spending any, we're not worth it. Don't invest. Let's just keep doing what we're doing and posting it on the internet. It doesn't matter who watches it. And, you know, that's not how you make a successfully marketed podcast, but it certainly turned into a bunch of men growing up. A lot like, you know, I think maybe we were emulating what Jordan Peterson was doing on the world stage, you know, like he was, and you could see if you look at him argue with some reporter 3 years ago versus have a debate with a distraught emotional individual last year, like his ability to communicate grew so much. And I think that we are at a much higher benefit to putting ourselves on the internet every week, because there's so much room for improvement.
If you're referring to the Kathy Newman interview, I still hold that up as one of the greatest YouTube videos of all time.
There's that dark part of us that enjoys, you know, getting someone completely reamed out appropriately. But it's so much more enjoyable when you see someone with as few words as possible make their point and have someone go, yeah, you addressed that.
Yeah.
And so that's why, like, why I wanted to do this part of our Wavecast segments is have men that are trying, you know, doing, and sometimes trying, as much as Yoda would chagrin us for that, we are trying. And see what happens when you put yourself in the lens of being interviewed and accept the fact that you are internet famous to some degree. You're on a podcast getting interviewed, and see what happens when we visit you again in 6 months or a year.
Pretty cool, man. I got a little bit of palm sweat, though.
Yeah? That's good.
Still,
that's
still
good.
A bit nervous. Yeah, man. It's pretty cool. It feels like, I don't know, good. know? Like, I've been working for something to happen, but you just don't really know what's gonna come about, but you know, you just keep going, and then things like this happen, right?
Yeah, it's like when Jordan Peterson talks about you have to aim for something, and then you might not reach it, but you might find another destination along the way that's worth shooting for, and other opportunities rise up. And as long as you have an aim, you can keep going towards that. And like I before all of this started, before I ever heard of Akira, I heard Jordan Peterson say once, you know, if you're struggling to find community, you know, just, you know, try to find it. Join a book club. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe you're right. So I joined the Discord. Turned out Jason Synapsian was starting up a book club. I was one of the first person in one of the first meetings. And then here we are interviewing Stobbsy.
Yeah. You gotta start somewhere, man.
Yeah. Well, and it's like you don't even know where you're going. Like you make this giant lofty dream slash goal, and it's like you think, okay, I'm gonna go achieve that. And it's like, no. Like you're gonna go and you're gonna walk up two sets of steps and you're gonna be like, I can see things so much differently now.
Wow, that's true. That's true. I'm pretty sure I have ADD, like at some point in my life, there's, you know, so especially, I feel like I'm all over the place, but it still always guides me in the same general direction, you know, like, although this is my road goes like this, like, you know, but anywhere along that path is going to be in the good, I'm going in a good direction, right?
Yeah, maybe you have to zigzag to get where you're going to get to, but
it's all right, man.
Yeah.
Kind of off topic, but have you guys heard of Eckhart Tolle?
Yeah. The Power of Now.
Yeah. When did we read that on the podcast, or did I just read that on my own?
You read it on your own, and then I bought it. I don't think we did a video on it. I haven't read it, so I don't think so. But we've mentioned it in a couple Wavecasts.
Have you been listening to him?
Me, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, my mom has more than I have, to be honest. But yeah, she's on like a different like spiritual journey of her own, right? And Eckhart seems to be playing a huge role in that. And he says things all the time that catch me off guard, that it just seems so profoundly simple, you know?
He got me off the intro alone. Like, it still is just blazoned on my brain. Like, I woke in the middle of the night thinking to myself, I can't live with myself. And finally, I realized if there is a part of me that can't live with myself, one of them has to go and they're not real. And that was the ego. And it was the ego couldn't live with itself. And as soon as he released that ego and accepted the moment of now and not addressing the cravings and the wants and the desires of the ego that he, you know, expands on his book and in his talks, it gave him that freedom. And it's so hard to do, but, you know, actually doing it is incredibly satisfying. And it's when you have a bigger goal that you can do that, I think.
Yeah.
Hey guys, this is what happens when you go into a podcast with no plan, ladies and gentlemen. It's terrifying, and you muddy around in the water for a bit.
Well, I could tell a story that kind of relates to my music situation.
Sure,
that sounds good.
All right, so the other day I've had this lifelong craving to want to own a motorcycle. So I saved up some money, I went to go buy my first motorcycle, and when I got there I realized that I have no idea what I'm doing. So the guy's like, dude, you remind me a lot of myself buying my first bike. And I'm like, yeah, like, so excited to do something, but you have no idea what you want to do, right? But that's my story.
So I keep going. Did you get the motorcycle?
I got it, I brought it home. Pretty dope.
Drive it home?
No, I didn't. I had to tow it home, but.
Oh.
But yeah, I don't know. I was just so excited to get this thing, and I have no idea really, like, about how to set it up, how to get it on the road, you know? I got my license, but.
Put gas in it, turnkey.
Throttle. Cool.
It's interesting because Jason, like Synapsian, he rides motorcycles and he clearly like is passionate about it. So he the other day got to drive one that went like 120 kilometers in 7 seconds, 120 kilometers an hour. in 7 seconds or something like that from zero.
Something like
that. I don't know speeds in cars and motorcycles. Like I play video games. I barely drive my car. But he ritualized it, I think. Like he's out there riding this steel Mustang and it's tied to masculinity and freedom and, you know, being in the open air and on the road and seeing the vistas of the motorcycle tours. And there's roads like on the trips that I take that I remember my dad pointing out saying, that's a road that motorcyclists like. And it's like, we know that they're there and they're windy and they're beautiful. And it's like, if you think about it for 2 seconds, you're like, wait a second, isn't like that the Tao and feng shui and the winding path and nature and exposure to it and taking a longer time to get to the same point? And so there's a becoming that occurs clearly on a motorcycle that I do not know about.
Yeah. It reminds me of like when Alan Watts says something like, it's the doing of it itself that's important. You have to learn to play for the sake of play, because that's just part of how we develop as human beings. And if you don't get that, then, you know, it starts to manifest darkness in your overall life.
And that's what we're kind of doing with this episode. And you just got to open the tap of your thoughts and just be like, I don't really know what my point is, but here's what I'm thinking. And I'm just going to keep talking until I run out of breath. Yeah. And see if someone steps in.
And you have to use, I think art is the perfect method in order to do that, because like I'm a musician too, and like I play a little bit of guitar every day. Like nothing really serious like I was in high school, like playing bass and guitar in and out of bands and everything like that and after college. But nowadays I just, you know, play a little bit of guitar for fun and just, you know, what would this hip hop song or this pop song on the radio sound like as an acoustic folk cover? I can find out. I can break that ground myself. I don't have to like go on YouTube and look for it. I can just, I know the chords. I can do that. I can manifest that. And it's the doing of it itself that's important. And that breaks new ground. So like even just genre blending in music, like we wouldn't have Led Zeppelin if, you know, four white boys didn't decide to play black blues music.
True. Dude, Led Zeppelin is one of the greatest. Like they've blown my mind by how
Zeppelin wood carving right there.
I gotta say, I like that Mario poster on the door too.
Yeah. I try and stage a couple idols around the room to see if they make a conversation start. Honor the gamer in me.
But dude, I do have a question. Do you think that no matter what life path you were to choose, whether it was music or like a sport, for example, you would still be the same general character? Or do you think what you choose to sort of fall in love with shapes who you become?
That's a great question.
Because like for me, I'd still refer to the days where I played basketball to basically explain my life situations or like life things that have happened, you know. I can relate it all to basketball, like at any given time.
Right.
But then and nowadays I relate it to music though, right?
Right.
Well, and even when I was, before we got you in here, I was telling the guys, like, you know, he used to play basketball, then he had a knee injury, then he decided he thought he might have been a programmer, and then he fell in love with music a lot deeper. Yeah. And it's like, it's still in your story, right? It's still like those formative high school years and those events that sort of set us on this trajectory. But I think, I don't know what it is that makes us who we are.
But I think it's what makes us, I think it's what makes us social beings. Cause I've told this story. I don't know if I told it on the podcast or just privately before, but like when I was going through high school, like I had a really hard problem just relating to other strangers that weren't musicians. Because it's like whenever I would talk to a musician, there was a certain understanding. It's just like, okay, we're both got this same kind of goal in mind. We're both trying to improve. We're both like learning our scales and our chords and trying to get better and, you know, improving the bands that we're in and everything. But like I never got that kind of vibe from anybody that wasn't involved in music because I just didn't understand their drive. So I think it is what breaks us into like certain social groups, because once I got like inducted into the metalheads, like that's when my social life pretty much started. I just had, you know, people I talked to. I didn't really have friends. And like music class in grade 10 changed everything for me as a social human being. I wouldn't say it changed me fundamentally who I was, but like among other people, it helped me grow to find that specific connection. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I really like that. That was some solid feedback.
On the same, like in retrospect, that's most likely why I chose basketball. Like, because in the first huge portion of my life, music was always there. I just ignored it because basketball felt like it was the place where I was supposed to be, right? Like, I'm overly tall as a young kid. Like, overly, like, I mean, I was pretty athletic and I don't know. I sucked at basketball. Like, no lie, man. When I was in elementary school, all of my closest friends told me that I sucked. And I was like, yeah, right, man. I won't suck for all. So yeah, sure enough though, like when I graduated high school, I was like doing pretty good, man. But yeah, music was like literally always around. I remember when I was a kid, I got like a keyboard sent to me from my grandpa, and I just learned how to play all these songs without YouTube or without like a little book and stuff. But I just ignored it because I didn't think, as a kid, like what am I gonna do with a little keyboard? Like it's not like I'll be some big composer one day.
Right. So I've heard funny, Mozart. I'm not going anywhere.
When I was a little kid, for me, my story was, well, I'm not going to be Gretzky, right? I'm not doing sports. I'm not going to, like, what do you mean? It's one in a million that you get picked to be a pro. So why would I even become an athlete?
If you're going to look at Gretzky, you miss every shot you don't take.
Well, I didn't look very hard. And I was playing video games, which is sort of where I was trying to go with it.
Hence the Super Mario background.
I don't think it's what you do that makes you who you are. I think who you are shows up in whatever you do, but what you choose, sort of, it's like that path you were talking about, but I've got like a way bigger ability to spread my arms.
Well, dude, programming is on my path.
It puts blinders on. You know what I mean? It's like, so now I'm looking over here. The path is still this big, but I'm looking at music, or I'm looking at video games, or I'm looking at sports, and everybody is experiencing the same thing. But for some reason, the way we've taught it is the musician does not understand the plumber. And it's like, you're learning stuff to become better, to do things, to create things. And we could all be sharing our resources and opportunities and tools, but we don't, we're talking Greek to each other.
Yeah. Speaking of the Greeks, this is why I love the Greeks, like Plato, who said that every child should be taught music, every child should be taught gymnastics and arithmetic and how to read and write and do math. And like, it's important skills for a developing mind. And all of these skills, even if you don't use them, like, even if I didn't pursue, like, I'm not going to pursue being a musician. It's just like a hobby for me now, but it's still a part of who I am. But it also opened up the path for me to find Akira, to find the book club, to find all of these great books, to find people that were writers to inspire me to say, hey, maybe I could dabble in writing, attempt to write a book in a form of a short story or whatever, and then realize, you know what would be the greatest medium for me to write in? Comic books. So that's my current path. Everything like zigzags. You don't have to be like, you don't have to have tunnel vision on it. You can separate your targets every once in a while, but bringing it back to Jordan Peterson again, he always talks about how you should have like the one goal or one aim at the top of the hierarchy to maintain.
Well, to be honest, that was like something Bouchard taught, you know, Bouchard. Well,
he taught me that
in high school, man. It's like, because I was going to do track and field, football, and basketball. But he's like, dude, like, what do you really want? Like, basketball? Or do you just want to be kind of, like, do you want to be a jack of all trades? Or do you want to be a master of something?
Yeah. You know? And that's so huge. Like, there's 168 hours every week, folks. and 100 of them are already accounted for, if not more. And like, so my wife, she's got this YouTube channel she's posting her music on now, and she was telling me she was gonna start doing so. I don't even remember what it was, but I was like, well, you could do that 12 hours a week, or you could have those 12 hours a week to practice a new song or learn something else on the keyboard. You know, like you can only focus on like maybe three things, and you're only gonna excel at one of them. And like you can have a master in one thing, and you can double minor in another thing. But like
Yeah.
going for the double bachelor is not recommended. The course load is heavy.
Possible, but it's yeah. But it's hard.
Major minor. I know what I'm talking about. I didn't drop out in the first 3 months. Oh wait, yes I did. But my path is still a zigzag. I just kind of went like this, and then waited for a minute, and now we're going back up again.
Dude, everything in life, it works in waves, just about, you know?
That's why we're
Like
called
literally.
Book Wave.
As the wave cast, bro. Welcome to the club.
We're way
Dude, I'm on
ahead
the
of you,
wave
bro.
now. Yeah, I just hopped on the wave.
So, my question to you, Derek, is: are you the type of man that reads zero books every year?
Mean, not really. Like, this is one of the greatest books I'm reading right now. It's like,
Now we get into what our audience was after.
the DRZ service manual. I'm
Not
halfway through. But this book is
bad, not
super
bad.
informative. It teach like if you own anything, you might as well figure out how to make sure that it's going to be running at its optimal, you know, like obviously if I don't look after this bike, if I don't know anything about it, then when something happens, it could either kill me or, you know, I don't
Yeah.
have a bike to ride, so
I almost want to recommend a book to you, but I
what's
haven't read it yet, so I don't know if I
that?
should. But
Well, let me see my.
it's the
Go
art of
ahead.
Zen and motorcycle maintenance. And
Whoa. That'd be a sick book.
it's
Is this a
literally
real
a,
book?
yeah, it's the
Yeah.
art of Zen and motorcycle maintenance. And it was, he literally just takes like the instructions of how to maintain your motorcycle and turns that into like a Buddhist, neo-Buddhist Zen practice.
That's hilarious, dude. You know how many all those maintenance guys, every time they like bust a finger or whatever, they're always swearing, so they could definitely use a book like that, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, 'cause like I feel like the what is it? The stereotype about men is that they don't read the instructions, they don't ask for directions, right? And it's like, so for us, one of our big things and the reason we're doing the readings that we're doing is like we live in North America, and this continent basically was built on the Bible, and it's like effectively the instruction manual for this huge crusade building this country. So for us, it's like, are we even trying? Like, did we even like you know, you want to do art, you go off, you get an art degree, you learn the rules, and then you break them. But it's like if you don't read the manual for your bike and then it blows up on you, it's like, well, of course you didn't even try. Like,
But dude, also the Bible was written like thousands of years ago, so it was designed for a time then. But I mean, it's still relevant in today's world because a lot of the ideas are still the same. But obviously, if you think about the last 25, 30 years, dude, so much has changed that it's ridiculous. Like in 30 years, right? Like it's almost like uncomprehendable to think if you were born 30 years prior to your birth, like who would you have become, dude? A totally different person, most likely, because of your surroundings and your what's put in your face 24/7, you know?
your environment has a huge influence on your DNA and your path in life. But like, yeah, no, I think that was the whole thing, was that the Bible was this thing that I never looked at my entire life. I never really went to church, except for when I was really young. And I've always identified as agnostic, but I've always yearned for spirituality because, like you said earlier, you know, the perennial philosophies that all of these religions have. And that's why we have the Quran on our hit list for the books that we're going to be reading, right? Like,
Right
the
there.
Torah is the first five books of the Old Testament. So we've already done Judaism. And we're still doing Judaism, and we're getting into Christianity, and we're going to go after Islam, and we've done the art of war, and we've done meditations, and we're looking at them all because it's like everything's changing so much. but there's books that have been around for thousands of years and are still getting sold at these capitalist bookshops. Maybe there's something of value we can take into the future with robots.
Yeah, like when I first read Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, I was like, how old is this guy? And he's literally just changing my life every single page. This shouldn't be happening. This shouldn't be applicable, but somehow it is.
Roman emperor?
Yeah.
Are they like him talking about his experiences of his meditations, or just like what meditation
is? It's his personal journal.
Yeah, the book Meditations is basically an instruction manual to himself. He's like, these are my values. This is what I've learned in life. This is what I'm going to meditate on every day to keep me on track. Like, every day you wake up, you're going to deal with people that are, you know, arrogant and surly and meddling. That's a fact, and there's nothing you can do about it. Let's just keep that knowledge with us, and then it'll never catch us off guard.
My favorite Marcus Aurelius one was the thing about letting petty tyrants ruin your day. Like, just don't let that happen, because there are petty tyrants everywhere that will die on any hill. Yeah, exactly, right? Like, the amount of ignorance I had and how much I put this book on a pedestal when we're talking about, like, the Bible specifically. Like, I went into the Bible thinking, okay, this is going to give me all the answers to life. Like, this is the Christian view of the world, and they're going to tell me why my life sucks, how I'm a screw up, how to make it better. I got into it, and they're like, if a bat falls into your water, dump the water and destroy the vessel, because you'll get sick if you eat anything that has a bat touch it. And it was like last March when we're dealing with the COVID pandemic starting out. And it's like, we're just in Jewish purity codes about how to keep your camp clean. It's like, if someone's got spots on them and open lesions, send them out of the camp for 2 weeks. Burn all of their possessions. Do not talk to them. Do not touch them. Do not go near them. And then maybe they can come back. But if they still look weird, wait another week. And I'm like, this is all we needed to do all over the world. And it was like, there was no big aha, like, you're living a bad life. It was just like, really, like, so this was this guy's name, and this is what you do if there's poop in your food. Don't eat it.
Yeah. And I still think there's a lot we can learn from even Socrates about how to have a conversation, how to ask a question, how not to, you know, offer an answer without, you know, thinking about it for a second or two. Think before you speak.
Well, they're still teaching it. Like, if you want to get a philosophy degree, it's immediate. But if you want to be a social service worker, you need to learn about fallacious argument types. And that's Socratic dialogue. That's the slippery slope fallacy. That's ad hominem. Like, if and if you don't even know what fallacies are, like, you're missing out on how conversation works.
Yeah, no true Scotsman, that kind of thing.
It's like, if you don't know that if someone is making an argument based on the fact that Trump's hair is orange, has no argument, and that is just this basic fallacy called ad hominem, or the straw man fallacy. Like, there's so many basic things where it's like, oh, that's a trap. Like, you fell into it. You're not making a good point.
I thought we weren't going to get into politics.
The thing is, like,
it's unavoidable.
It should be something to be getting into, right? It should be, as far as I'm concerned, and I don't like to deal in shoulds, because only the Sith deal in absolutes. But if it's as easy for me to learn about plumbing as it is about politics, why is it that there aren't more DIY, politically involved volunteers when we've got handymen in every house across the nation that are willing to save $10 to learn how to do it themselves? Well, it's like, you could save yourself a bunch of suffering if you knew how to communicate and converse and know what the word liberal meant.
Oh, that's too true.
Like, we've got this tiny brain in our pocket that gives us access to all of this information that changes the entire game. Like you're saying, the past 30 years have changed so much. But the human experience is not evolving with the technology. And if you want to be afraid of a sci-fi dystopian. It's the one where humans make themselves obsolete because they don't take the upgrade that says, I can learn everything that we have ever learned. And I can have a more than trivial understanding of everything that anyone is experiencing on the planet right now. And that's why I didn't get into religion, to finally come back to my point, was because it was so easy to discover that all of these religions stem from the same values because of this technology. And it's like, I have much more learning to do before I make my decision. And I think that if we all as a human race consumed the collective knowledge, we could, you know, create something higher from it. But if you don't consume all of the rules that have ever existed and are still recorded and still getting printed 1 million copies a month, you're not taking in enough data. You're not going to get a good artificial intelligence if you don't factor in enough variables.
True.
I had a thought, but now it's gone.
So now you're a node in our network, Dobbsy. I ask you to shoulder as much as you can.
I'm trying. I don't know. I don't know where to take off from where you left off, but like, yeah, man.
Yeah, that's the problem I'm having. Like, I had something to say, and then you said something really profound, Will, and now I'm just at a loss for words.
Yeah. Just shift gears entirely.
Well, the one guy that you were talking about not too long ago, the idea that I had a couple minutes back was that it sounds a lot like Stoicism.
Yes.
Yes.
And Marcus Aurelius,
the Stoic.
He is?
Yes. There's...
Yeah.
There's three major Stoics that they talk about. It's like Seneca, Zeno, and Marcus Aurelius. Cicero is there too. Epictetus is another one.
Epictetus.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah, man. I don't know. And then also on Will's point there about how all the religions stem kind of from the same idea. Like for my own journey in life, I found that Each religion just about talks about fasting, which is one common interest between all religions. And then they also talk about meditation, which is common throughout just about all religions.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how deep you guys want to get into like philosophical religious talk, but I find it all pretty
deep enough to dive, bro.
I just don't know how deep it'll go. Like, I might make somebody angry based on some free thinking.
Yeah, well, I'm not afraid to say that, like, meditation or some form of mindfulness practice manifests in all religions, because I think that the purpose of a religion is to really bind a community together over, like, a common cause. And then, like, when you introduce the idea, like, once you meditate, you're better to other people. You know, if it's prayer or meditation or whatever form it manifests in that tradition, it's all kind of related.
Yeah, like, don't be afraid of offending someone, because the whole point is to, like, if you've misspoke, then, you know, hopefully we can learn from discussing whatever we discuss. But if we don't discuss it, we still have that ignorance. And I think that the only way to grow is to just have a stupid conversation where we talk about stuff a bit too deep and we try and tread water.
Half of our subscribers at least are Christians, and I spend every podcast episode being an arrogant atheist, so they haven't left yet. I don't think you're going to scare them off.
Fair. Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of, if you think about Jesus in his time, where he lived and what was going on at that time was just about like medieval times, right? Like people were being thrown in coliseums with like, it was before that?
Yeah, well, like,
right?
Is the fall of the Roman Empire got sparked by Christianity, so.
The problem with the lens through which we teach history to children is that they make it seem that everything that came before medieval times was less civilized. But
Right.
one of the things that John Vervaeke makes a point of saying in this podcast series we're listening to is that the level of amenities and human experience that we had at the peak of the Roman Empire, which came before medieval times, we didn't get back to that until about 270 years ago.
Yeah.
We're talking Roman aqueducts, we're talking Colosseums, we're talking Olympics, we're talking philosophy and politics and organized militia and distribution of funds with gold with Caesar's face on it.
Hence
Give
why we
unto
call
Caesar
it,
that which is Caesar's.
hence why we call what happened after the collapse of the Roman Empire the Dark Ages. It was a moment of darkness. This is when we forgot about Plato and Aristotle and the dramatists and Marcus Aurelius and the Stoics and the Cynics that came after, and everyone that wrapped it all together again didn't come until like the 1700s, 1800s, when they were allowed to like start questioning Christianity again.
Like less utilities in the sense of air conditioning, less metal. But basically, Jesus was just missing Wi-Fi.
Yeah, maybe I've just been watching too many videos about Friedrich Nietzsche, but I've come to this theory that like, these figures like Jesus and Socrates and Marcus Aurelius, they were the Übermenschen, you know what I'm saying? And
The Superman.
that's what we're aspiring to be here is like we have all of these, different ideals we can hold up and compare themselves to, like the Buddha, the Marcus Aurelius, Jesus Christ of Nazareth,
Napoleon.
any number of figures you can put up on a pedestal. You can call them, great masters or sages. That's the practice that I'm working with right now, is like find the mentors and like model my own set of like values and virtues off of them, and then see where that gets me.
Like our word mentor comes from the guy Mentor in Homer's Odyssey. Homer was one of the great Greek poets. Like we haven't gotten away from Greece in the slightest. Like they built us so much. Like it's pathological. And by pathological, of course, I mean the Greek pathos logos.
True.
It's insane. Everything in our body, everything in nature, it's all named
The
after
Greeks,
Latin
but
and
dude, don't you think
Greek.
they're like okay? Because if you go so deep back to the first humans, whatever, Neanderthals or whatever, there was like a couple different actual types of like Neanderthals, right? Like, wasn't there like there was a Neanderthal, and then there was another species that was like the Neanderthal, but not the same exact
Yeah, like
thing?
the Neanderthal specifically is like nowadays in anthropology, they're like, well, maybe the Neanderthals didn't have much to do with humans at all. They were like this other primate that we came in contact. Like, if the hominins, like the Homo sapiens or the Homo erectus, all came out of Africa, then they went north, they found like the Neanderthals up there. So they don't know if there was like a genocide or they interbred to create modern humans, but there's plenty of different, like the Denisovans is another one, and Homo floresiensis. They were like a
Yeah.
hobbit people that lived in like the Pacific Islands.
But imagine if like untouched that population of or that type of human or whatever you want to call it just was able to fully develop on its own, untouched from mankind or whatever. Like what sort of mini world do you think that that would be on this earth?
It'd look a lot more like Lord of the Rings.
But do you think it would be filled with what do you call it? Capitalism and this idea that you need to like of accumulation or
That's a good question.
I don't think so. I feel like there's another way of it all happening. But I guess this is like
Well, so I'll share a post that I read today because, like, I like to lean on the anecdotal fallacy. It's my favorite fallacy to use because it's pretty much all I have. So I was reading this Facebook post, and this guy was parked in a parking lot. It's probably BS, right? Because it's just trying to make this argument. But he had a sports car, and this person comes up to him like, "Oh, imagine how many families you could have fed with the money that you spent on that sports car." And he's like, "Okay, well, there were the families that got fed because they built the tires, and there were the families that got fed because they assembled the frame, and there were the families that got fed because they transported the car. There was families that got fed because they sold the car. Every single piece that went into this contributed to a household across several nations across the globe. So, yeah, that is a good practice. Thank you." Like, we have a system that allows us to trade value for labor, and we're on the cusp of a time where we're realizing, we need the robotic and weak technological revolution. For some reason, we've skipped that for the past 30 years. It's really disgusted me that we're at Call of Duty 30 and Saw 17 and Friends can do 400 episodes and everybody's okay with watching the same stories over and over again and rebooting everything and then just swapping out the genders. It's like we're not growing.
I was waiting for you to list off Star Wars Episode 9.
I haven't got there yet. I'm not against it. Don't get me wrong. I
Oh,
enjoy
I am.
consuming the same stories over and over again. But also, we need more robots in the homes and in the workplaces. Not ones with brains, just ones that like do this and then pass me something so that
Well,
I
we could
don't
just
have to
build our
do
own.
that.
We could
We
build our
could.
own, dude.
We could. But like, I mean, 7 billion. Like, I want 21 billion more devices in every home, smart mirrors. I want smart mirrors in every home. I want Chromecasts. If you are watching this on a Blu-ray player with software that
What?
enables you to go on YouTube because you don't have Chromecast, you are in the 90s. And I yearn for you because the Chromecast experience of Google TV, please give us money, Google,
You know what
is
I
amazing. Like, if you're not talking to your remote to find the thing on your screen right away, like, why are you pushing buttons still?
You know what I thought of when you said that? The little robot that Rick Sanchez makes in Rick and Morty. What is my function? Pass the butter. Is that it? Yes. Oh.
Sorry,
I don't
bud.
want depressed little robots.
No, don't give them artificial intelligence. That's the problem. You just need
Okay.
things that make things easier. Like if you're a person who likes music and who likes to listen to music and has a day job, the moment you open your door, why the heck are you not greeted by like the most beautiful orchestra of sound and technology? Like, why is Led Zeppelin not getting dropped immediately the moment you open your door? Why is food not ready for you? Why is your grocery list not automated? Why is your car not driving you? There's so much room for technology that already exists and has existed for 70 years in some instances to be implemented into people's lives.
But is technology a distraction from because, like, for example, the air conditioner seems like this great, amazing device that was made for our for the benefit of humanity, right? But now we're so conditioned to live to keeping our environment so specifically controlled that we get cold when it's 5 degrees outside. But in real human, a real human used to journey thousands of miles. You know what I mean? Without
That sucked. That was stupid.
it did suck, but it was necessary, dude. It was
Yeah.
necessary.
What if it becomes necessary again, though? That's what we're
And that's
saying.
An interesting take, but what I would argue is that, like, since humans started picking berries and saying, "Oh, how do I hold all these berries?" and then invent a sack and then put berries in a sack, we have been integrating technology. Yeah, you know what meme I'm referencing, Scott.
But how
but it's
far does it
like,
need to be taken, though? You know what I mean? Like, if we
isn't
could
how far
reinvent
does
the wheel.
technology have to be taken? But it's like you shouldn't abuse your air conditioner, right? Like you should be able to endure cold climates. But also, we are so much more capable of doing so many more things. And if we replace industry with technology, we'll free up bodies and brains, and they're going to have discussions like this to figure out what the point of the human race is. Because we're alive, there's suffering, and there's room for improvement. And there's a whole galaxy out there. And we should be able to do it sustainably, and we should be able to do it including every single member of the human race. And everyone should have a roof over their head, and clean water, and food, and the ability to improve themselves, and the ability to create whatever they want. And once we can get to a place where everybody can do whatever they want in terms of creativity and art, then I think we'll see a human evolution, and we'll be able to create a new paradigm that, you know, doesn't have this crazy consumerism.
I think you're somewhat backwards. Once everyone is in a place where they can create their art, then things start happening. You have to make the move to create the art. You have to put your first step forward first before anything comes into fruition. I might be nitpicking when you say art, but I hear of like the art just to do something, to undergo something, to create a new technology or think up a new psychotechnology, or, you know, develop a little piece of cloth that you can hold your berries in.
Or build yourself a house. That's technology.
Yeah.
Keep yourself from back in the day, like, yeah, you could go out and try and collect a bunch of berries with your hands, or you could use a basket. But like nowadays, we just have a machine that just clear cuts the entire bush down, dude. It takes as many berries as we want. We don't even need them. Half of them go to rot.
Yeah, that's wrong. That's so wrong, right? Like, that's not sustainable.
That's the abuse of technology we're talking about.
Yeah, and I agree full-fledged. Because it's like, I'm not trying to get 1 million berries. I'm trying to get enough berries for everyone forever.
Yeah, man. Exactly. But I think what could do that is if we go back to the days where, like, dude, 30 years ago, if you needed a chair, you'd build your chair, dude.
Yeah. Like,
you know what I mean? There's no going to IKEA and trying to pick out the fanciest $300 chair you can afford. It's like you just build yourself whatever chair you're going to need to use. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but if you don't need to build any chairs, and you can use someone else's chair because that's their own art. This is the node in a network integration. Mm. It's like you use their art. It's like, now I have a chair. I'm more comfortable when I create my art. I have True. A different chair. I have a guitar stool for when I play music. So, you know, that's art right there.
That's true.
So I'm trying to figure out what I said that you said that I was backwards about, because I don't fully even know what I entirely said. But like
you said we need to get to a place in culture or something. I might be paraphrasing. Where everyone is in a position where they can create their art. And I think everyone needs to create their art to get ourselves in a position where we can go forward. Like, art is the starting point. You presented it as like a final end point or like a progression. I see it as step number one. If you're not expressing... Maybe.
Yeah, that's what... See, I saw it as a starting point, but that we had to get to the starting line because there were people who literally don't have homes and don't have resources to make art. And I was talking about 7.2 billion artists, right? Like, not culturally. Like, within our culture, I think it's on us to empower as many people to do what they should be doing. Like you were saying, the chair makers should be making chairs. I don't think we should be wasting time making chairs, just as much as I don't think we should be wasting time traveling thousands of miles unless it's automated in a Tesla and I can make my art on the road.
Yeah.
But dude, what if living in, like, living a part of nature along with technology that you can control on your own? Like, basically what I'm trying to say is what I would like to do is, yeah, like I said, like you said in the beginning of the video, is I'd like to get a bus. I'd like to turn that bus into my home, fill it with technology that's all controllable and customizable by me that I can understand and work with, get a solar panel and maybe a wind turbine after I find some property, and grow my own fruits, grow my own vegetables, raise my own, it's gonna sound a bit dark, but raise my own meat.
Yeah.
You know?
No. Just... It's sustainable, right? Like micro sustainability. But you're not an island. And that's the problem. Because what happens is when you go to raise a cow, you find out it's a heck of a lot easier to raise 1,000. Because it's like, what you need to do to raise one is almost as much as what you need to do to raise 10. And like, are you in the business of raising cows? Is that your art? I don't think so. And that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a place for a nomad like you. And I think we're getting to a place where we could have a technological artist nomad culture that is, you know, self-sustaining in the van, can live off the land, la la la. But like, we have destination resort experience cities for these people to go, plug in, pay their lot fees, go down to the butcher shop and get, you know, sustainably sourced, organic, grass-fed, blah, 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 her name was Lucille, beef. And, you know, love the earth and be in that world and a part of that world and be able to not be stuck in one location, because there's a lot of us that need to see the rest of the world before we even know what it is that we're trying to experience. And there is just as many of us that want to be in a city that's sustainable. And I don't think that we need to have a Cain and Abel story again. I think we can have both. I think we can have the society that prepares for the masses and the individuals that wander looking for their learnings. Like, that's folded right into the yogic sort of lifestyle. Is back in the day, you know, you if you were a yogi, you could live in your little hut and go into town and people knew what you were and they would give you resources because they knew what you were, and here are your resources, go do your learnings. And you do that for 5 years, you know, in isolation. And we should be getting all of us on the whole globe on the same page of being able to support the wanderer and to have the resources in the cities and in the metropolises that allow people to make art, you know, whatever that is. Like, uninhibited creativity is going to get us to the next stage beyond capitalism, but capitalism will get us to uninhibited creativity. I guarantee you that.
I don't know, man. I feel like if capitalism weren't a thing, it'd be easier to be creative because people don't want to share their ideas, so they withhold them. Because if you don't put a price on your idea, then you're losing out. You know what I'm saying?
I think that I have a whole workshop for you on unpacking your limiting beliefs around sales, because you couldn't make your art without capitalism. You couldn't make beats. You couldn't get your word out without Spotify. You couldn't be supported by your hundreds and thousands of friends without Facebook. And you wouldn't be able to resource and source all of these different samples and inspirations without the internet and the flattening of the world that we've experienced. And so all of internet, that
internet is a product of capitalism.
100%.
Yeah.
But I thought internet was originally built on the idea of sharing. And that was
it is,
guys wanted to share their files on their computer.
It wouldn't have existed at all without the idea of capitalism as a base setting, though. Because, like, you got to think, like, yeah, sure, we're in a capitalist system that isn't quite perfect, but, you know, what else can you really compare it to?
Communism? But if everyone... Well, yeah, I mean, but it's just that the internet, for example, it's like the encyclopedia of all things, right? But you have to pay. I mean, I guess you'd have to pay for an encyclopedia back in the day, but I just feel like people should have access.
It's all man hours, bro.
But we should be able to access information freely because we're trying to advance humanity. We're not trying to slow it down. But the fact
the that problem
you have to pay
isn't,
for information slows you down rather
the problem
than just
isn't,
being, having access to it. Sorry.
Problem isn't accessing information freely, because you can. You can walk into the town library and hop on the internet. It's free to you if you go there, where the resource is, because of the capitalistic system that we have that has amassed and put aside taxpayers' dollars to afford the library these utilities. But if you want to get magic signals out of the air, you need parts. And if you want parts, you need skill. And if you want skill, you need institution. And if you want
so
institution,
you need the internet to be able to create your own internet.
Yeah, like you need infrastructure. You want to learn how to make a forge and refine copper wires and like build a satellite tower? Like, do you want, like, if you're an artist, a literal artist, do you want to go out into the valley at like specific times of the year and find flowers and get ash and make pigments and create dyes? Or do you want to go to Michael's and buy your craft supplies and get to work?
Well, dude, remember earlier in the segment or whatever, we were talking about these zigzag paths, and you said that I wanted to be a computer programmer?
Yeah.
Well, before I could afford this, which is my beat machine, right, I built my own with wires, and like I could literally go and get it. It's in that drawer right there. And I built my own controller because I couldn't afford to buy one. So I feel like that's
amazing.
But this
that's
is where
pretty incredible.
Dude, people should be on that wave though. Like, if you can't afford it, don't just call it off. Like, figure out how you can get past that barrier. Like, there is
but I return to the 168 hours in a week. Like, what if you could have cured cancer if you weren't so busy making this frugal MIDI board? Like, what if while you're growing your meat, you could have, if you were in a lab, cured cancer?
But dude, if I had access to infinite amounts of information at a young age that I didn't have to, like, that my parents or whatever situation I was a part of growing up, if I just had access to the internet for free, maybe I could have cured cancer when I was like 15 or something. You know what I mean? If you have access to unlimited information and you're fixated on any sort of idea, whether it's music or construction or engineering, whatever it be, and you have access to information at a young age, dude, why wouldn't you be the greatest to ever live at that task?
I think my major issue is with the word free, because it's not free. Because people are paid to maintain the internet. People were paid in a capitalistic environment to create the internet. People were paid in a capitalistic environment to create the first computers, to create the lines that run along the bottom of our oceans. It took man hours, and those men needed to be paid.
Well, and it's not even just wires, right? Because I think we all forget that all of those wires and all of those signals run back to millions and millions of computer servers where the cloud is, and it holds all of the information. And if they catch on fire and blow up, there's a whole other room with the exact same information and some guy who's got to like reset up the internet because there was a fire. Like, there's cubic volumetric computer rooms storing all of this data constantly. And in order to make those computers, we needed almost every single resource we've ever come across on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
We need diamonds and crystals and coppers and gold, iron and silver and metal and wood and tile and clay and acids and like everything we've ever learned has gone into the internet. And it's like this crazy thing that because some guy was able to mess around and get some funding and grab some stuff at the store that was already made for him, he was able to devote his time into developing, or their time into developing, this thing. And it's like, if we all have to make it all of the time, we're just going to be stuck in reinventing the wheel.
But look at Linux, dude. Something where it started from nothing, but multiple people came together with their free time to create something literally that's just as good as like the top people. Like, people are being paid to work on Windows, yeah, but nobody was paid to build Linux. And they're like the 20 different distributions that they have that are all specific towards a certain task, you know.
Show of hands, who's using Linux right now? Oh, not me.
Actually, all three of us are. All three of us are on our cell phones.
But we're not, right?
It's a form of Linux.
We're standing on it. We're standing on Linux. We're shoving our feet into it. And on top of Linux, we're building something else. It's like, oh, thanks. That was nice. It's a shame that you didn't benefit from it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I just have this conflicting idea between...
I hear you because I used to think the exact same way before I read Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
That's a good one. Do I think 67 people need $1 trillion each? No.
Yeah.
Do I think that there is a certain amount of money that is enough for an individual? Yes. Do I think that telling someone how much money they need is how this works? No.
Do you think your opinion on what you just said will change the day you have lots of money?
No. I think that realistically, I will have a honeymoon experience. Absolutely. It'll be like, and then I hope, like all other majorly addictive substances, I will come down out of that and I will return to self, and I will not, you know, because of the sharpening of my mind and my discipline, not get stuck in ego and not be operating out of, you know, toxic emotional and negative limiting beliefs that I think, you know, because like psychology has been around for like 8 minutes. Like,
yeah.
The biggest problem with all of our government systems and all of these systemic issues is that they're not systemic, and that there's just lots of disorganized humans with terrible brains and traumas, and they all need help and a hug,
yeah.
And they need to be informed that that's not healthy and that they're being bad, and they need to look at the time when they were 6 years old, when they learned in the 40s that this is how the world is, and discover that they're completely wrong. And it's like, you need to go, like, with the times, like, we're all humans, and yeah. We're all suffering, and we all need to help each other.
I feel like we're right now in an age of integration, let's say, where, like, I don't know, before, like, I don't know, back in Ayn Rand's day, you couldn't get a communist and a capitalist in the same room without, you know, guns or knives being pulled, right? But nowadays, you have, like, just in the podcast space, people debating all kinds of ideas like atheism versus Christianity, capitalism versus communism, a religious ideology versus, you know, only religious ideology. It all needs to be mixed together somehow, and I think we're just figuring out how that works, because we all know, when we ask the question of, like, politics, we all know that capitalism isn't the best, like, system, period. We all know it can be improved of. We all know it can be improved upon. We just don't really know how. Like, maybe the answer is in Buddhism. Maybe the answer is in Stoicism. Who really knows? We don't have the answers. That's what we're having these conversations for.
And it's funny, because, like, it certainly is a philosophical answer, right? I don't think it's not the question of capitalism. It's the question of what's behind capitalism. And it's these people. And that's why I've got you here, Stobbsy/Derek, right? Like, because it's like people not showing up in the real world and trying to be a human and holding people accountable. And it's like, if you have... like, it's not money that is limiting humans. It's humans limiting money that is limiting humans.
Mm.
And there's more of us than them. It's not the government that is at fault for not addressing what we want them to address. It's yeah. It's us. And it's
our fault, like, for you, not updating the system.
The, like, three of us could run for office and get voted in. Like, we could make policy. We have that freedom. Do you understand how revolutionary it is that we could become the highest level of government in our land?
Need to learn French first.
We could almost become the highest seat of authority in our land. Je ne peux pas parler français plus beau, mais... And that's it. That's all I've got. But it's like, that's insane. You can't do that in communism. You cannot do that in socialism. You cannot do that in China. You cannot do that in North Korea.
We say this all as Canadians who benefit from a heavily socialistic type of capitalism.
But it's like, there's so many people that don't vote that when the town of Midland posts that we're putting in a roundabout at the bottom of 93 and Highway 12, which has been in the works for 3 years, they are shocked. And they are freaking out. They're like, ah, who decided this? Some idiot? It's like, no, it's a town. So they consulted a consulting firm, which had an engineer and a contractor. And they talked to the county. and the county talked to every county, and the counties talked to the province, who talked to every province, and the head of the federal nation, who all at all levels are talking to everybody else just like them all over the world in every single institution to find out what's the best thing for humanity. And they all determined that if we lower the speed to 60 and put in a roundabout, traffic will move quicker and people will die less. And they put a lot of thought and dollars into it. And they came to the conclusion. They did not just get a three-year-old to draw a circle and point at the road and say, oh, what a great idea, Timmy, let's do that. But that's how they're reacting on Facebook. It's like, they, you didn't go to town council. You didn't attend the meetings. You didn't read the notes. But when it gets to Facebook, you freak out. Like, are you even trying?
Now we've come full circle to the beginning of the conversation of why Will deleted Facebook in the first place.
I'm speaking a different language on that network. And it's like, the people that are on there, I'm not even convinced they're speaking. It's almost the equivalent to being asleep and talking. And it's like, they're just saying what the engine is asking them to say.
Yeah.
Dude, you know what?
You ever do that with someone when they were sleeping? Like, hey, do you like tomatoes on your face? And like, yeah. And you put tomatoes on their face? Like, you idiot. Like, that's Facebook. That is big media and Facebook user.
I know you are, but what am I? I think that's a pretty good place to end. Bashing social media, talking about the hero's journey and some of the mentors. Do you have any social medias that you want to tell to our advertise to our audience?
Well, you know, I told you about that bike situation.
Yeah.
Motorbike there, and I showed you this thing. So my plan is to start a YouTube series called Beats in the Bush, where I ride out into the bush, chill out in the forest, and just make some music. And so stay tuned to my YouTube for that.
That's awesome.
Try to post music every other week and keep going.
Links in the description.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It was a pleasure chatting with you guys.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure having you on. Until next time, may the force be with you.
Or equal to mass times acceleration.